Yeah, of course. All right, so let me start. Jessica Edwards. All right, absent. And then Kate Elliott.
Here.
All right. And then Jeremy Harkin.
Here, present.
Perfect. And then Derek Espadas.
Present.
All right. And Cam Juarez. Okay. And then Megan Bratovich. Okay. And Jonathan Lee Confer.
Here.
All right. And Zach Coble is excused. And Ray Jordan.
Here.
All right. And Chaz Gross.
Hey, Ray, what's up?
Perfect. All right. And we have quorum.
Awesome. Thank you so much. So for the next 5 minutes, we're going to open the floor to members of the public. If you are joining the meeting, please feel free to introduce yourself, and raise some concerns relevant to the disability community in Tucson. I'll wait like 10 or 15 more seconds to see if anybody from the public is here and wants to unmute and introduce themselves. Otherwise, I'll go and move on. Okay, we're going to go and move on to the third part of the agenda. That's the reconsideration of the tabled, or maybe the retabled, accessibility memorandum. So this was something that we tabled from last time from tabling, and we had made edits from 2 months ago to the memorandum. And I'm going to open the floor to anybody to go ahead and discuss any of the edits that were made and see if they have any suggestions or feedback that you guys want to add to this, or thoughts or anything on it. And again, I'd like to thank Ray and Zach for putting this together. They did a lot of work on this and put a really good thoughts into this memorandum. So, were there any comments, suggestions, or anything like that you guys have any thoughts on the memorandum?
I'm wondering, Ray, what you thought the major changes were.
Pretty much everything.
Yeah.
It was, to put it in a nutshell, the ordinance, and so I'm having to remember back 2 months or 3 months whenever we began to write this. And I've briefly revisited, particularly, actually, let me talk about the re, as I revisited the document a little more recently when Jonathan came on board and read the document and added a bunch of really valuable stuff and it putting it in a better like national context, but also the fairly detailed technical stuff that we'd already put in the document. I think looking back on it was kind of difficult to read. So Jonathan actually condensed that and put it into a table form. So what that means is that there's a fair bit of the document that's repeated, but it's repeated in a way that some people will get it in the way it's written in one place. And if they don't, then they'll get it in the other place. So I think that's really important. But essentially, the ordinance is based on a 2007 version of, a national document,
The national code, yeah.
a national code. Thank you. And of course, that's a bit old and a lot has changed since then. The whole thing needed to be updated. Additionally, it was geared towards making houses, new houses, homes, visitable by people with physical disabilities primarily. And we've thought, well, that's not really good enough. What people with disabilities need somewhere to live. So, you know, visibility is just a part of it. You know, actually having the opportunity to buy or rent a house that's accessible, built with that in mind from the beginning, I think we all thought that was pretty important. So that's kind of where it's at, you know, bringing this thing into the, I guess it was already a 21st century document, but it was left over from the 1960s, I think.
That's what stuck with me from our initial conversation, was sort of that missing piece that Jonathan alluded to, too, is that, you know, modern-day codes need to be much more expansive in the way they're accommodating people in general, and this is our opportunity to put that in front of mayor and council. Thank you, Ray.
Pleasure.
Does anybody else have any thoughts, suggestions? I'll give it maybe like 10, 20 more seconds, and then if not, I'll go and make a motion to approve. Kind of just adding on to Ray's thing, I think one of the things that's been really interesting about the accessibility for single family homes is that ADA is now expanded into including diabetes, which is like, I don't know, I want to say like 20-30% of everybody. So it's like, really, this is actually going to be covering most of like a very good size of the population that needs to have accessibility too. So it's like, we continue to grow this necessity for accessibility, and it's really just good for public health in general. So it's like, there's no real reason not to have them bring stuff up to, a fair, standard.
Yeah.
So I guess with oh yes, Jeremy. Was it?
I know. It was actually Ray.
I didn't know.
Might I also say that when this issue was brought to Cody by the Department of, now I'm my brain's losing it, I think. When the opportunity came up, we thought, you know, it was suggested that it needed, the code needed some tweaks. And as we read the code, the 2000, you know, the early code, thought, no, it doesn't need some tweaks. We need to go all in on this. We may only get one opportunity. Let's just like go for broke.
Yeah, definitely. Brandy or Stephanie, can I have you guys, or actually not that yet, sorry, a motion to approve.
I would like to put forward a motion to adopt this memo. I just want to add a note, I think it was great work.
Thank you, Derek. Do I have a second?
Second.
That was Chaz. Thank you for seconding.
All right, so I'll go into the roll call now. Jessica Edwards. Oh, I'm not sure if she froze a little bit. I'll come
Jessica,
back.
Jessica, can you hear us? Oh, she looks like she froze, actually.
That's what I was thinking. So I'll come back, see if maybe her connection came back too. Kate Elliott?
Yes.
Perfect, thank you. Jeremy Harkin?
Yes.
Thank you. Derek Espadas?
Yes.
Thank you. And then Jonathan Lee Confer?
Yes.
Thank you. And Ray Jordan?
Yes.
Thank you. And Chaz Gross?
Yes.
Thank you. And it looks like Jessica has not connected back, or at least I can't hear anything. So I will not be able to count her vote from this. I'll just say it's abstained.
Okay.
But it still passes with 6-0, so with one abstain.
Great. Thank you so much. All right, we have a presentation about the sidewalk repair program from the Department of Transportation and Mobility representatives. So I'll let you guys introduce yourselves, and you will have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good afternoon, everybody. My name is Patrick Hartley. I am the planning administrator here with the Department of Transportation and Mobility, and thank you so much for the opportunity to present on some of the work that we're doing and installing and repairing sidewalks across the city of Tucson. I do want to apologize to you before I get started on this presentation. There were supposed to be a colleague of mine, Rob Lane, who would be providing information on the active construction on the Grant Road project. Unfortunately, he had a family emergency and has not been able to join us for this meeting. So we can table that piece of the agenda for an upcoming meeting, if that's okay, in the pleasure of the committee. I'm not really in a position to be able to speak to those items. Okay. And with that, I'd be happy to step into a brief presentation, but I'd like to reserve most of the time for questions and open discussion. Share my screen. Is that showing the presentations?
Yes.
Excellent. Thank you very much. All right. Well, I'm able to speak a little bit about what the work we are doing across some of the capital programs that we have available to us and how we're investing in sidewalks in the city of Tucson. So, again, thank you for the opportunity. I am Patrick Hartley, the planning administrator here within the Department of Transportation. So a couple of years ago, as part of our long-range transportation plan, what's called Move Tucson, we conducted a citywide sidewalk inventory, which as of now is functioning as our ADA transition plan as the City of Tucson for public rights of way. At the time that that effort was concluded with the inventory that was collected, and some of you might have been familiar with that and been involved in that process, but basically we drove all of our local streets with what's called mobile LIDAR, which is basically laser detection, and identifying all of the gaps in sidewalk, broken sidewalk, inaccessible sidewalk citywide. At the time, we had estimated about $987 million in overall sidewalk need and accessibility needs across the city. Given the rapid price cost escalations we've seen in the last couple of years, as well as a number of other factors that can often drive costs in projects as you get into the nitty-gritty of construction management, a reasonable estimate at this point in time is probably about $1.5 to $2 billion in need for sidewalk investment across the city of Tucson to bring everything up to fully accessible, complete, and connected sidewalk network. For reference, that's roughly the size of the totality of the RTA 1 funding initiative, which was a regional-wide sales tax across 20 years. So with that context, I want to give you a little bit of information about typically how sidewalks get built within the city of Tucson. For all of our major corridor projects that are kind of at that scale that we see on these RTA projects, such as Grant Road, Broadway Boulevard, Valencia, et cetera, we are installing sidewalks as part of that kind of overall suite of improvements that we're making to the roadway. So oftentimes those will include new pavement, drainage infrastructure, street lighting, traffic signals, new enhanced bike lanes. But essentially, we are always looking to make sure that we are installing fully code-compliant sidewalks with those efforts. And that can often be a challenging project component because as you get further to the outside of the roadway, especially when you're dealing within kind of the urban core of the city where we have really constrained rights of way, there's a lot of challenges with that sidewalk installation because you're running into a lot of, you know, off-street parking, driveways, not a lot of space. So that's something that's often being navigated through these corridor projects, but those are a great opportunity to kind of start with that more clean slate. We also do standalone sidewalk projects. I'm getting a little feedback on the audio here.
I muted her.
All good. Thank you. Standalone sidewalk projects, walkability projects, which are at a smaller scale than what we do on those large corridor projects. So these are what we're doing, like sidewalk infill. Typically, we're trying to work within the existing footprint of the roadway because the budgets are more constrained. These are also projects where we'll typically not remove existing compliant sidewalk, but really fill in the gaps. Whereas on those RTA corridor projects, we're taking out everything and replacing it all. So it's just at a matter of scale. Most of you have probably seen a lot of paving activity that's been happening around the city with Proposition 411. As a function of all of that local street repaving, where we have existing sidewalk, we're not adding sidewalk because those are largely paving projects, but we are touching all of the curb ramps that intersect with that paving work. So we've been doing hundreds or thousands of curb ramp upgrades across the city in the last couple of years. You know, as those get in place, it does make it easier then to connect sidewalks to them in the future where we're getting installed. And then on a more piecemeal basis, following city code, where there is private development that is increasing the footprint of the existing parcel by about 25%, they are required to install sidewalk along the frontage of those properties. There are some exceptions that they can, petition the department for or the city for relief from the sidewalk installation. And typically that's in more rural locations or where there's just no sidewalk on the corridor. So they would be doing essentially, 150, 200 feet of frontage kind of in isolation. So those are largely the programs that are installing sidewalks or how they happen through the project. In terms of the funding availability, we're leaning on two voter-approved funding initiatives in the city right now and are installing a lot of sidewalks through those. So Proposition 411 was approved by the voters in Tucson in 2022. It includes 80% of that funding is going for that local street repaving, which I just mentioned, which is also going to be installing curb ramps or upgrading curb ramps to meet the accessibility requirements across the city and bring into compliance with the Americans with Disabilities Act. We also have a standalone sidewalk funding program under that. So 20% of the entire program was dedicated at the direction of council for safety improvements, and that includes sidewalks, bikeways, traffic signal upgrades, street lighting, as well as some just kind of spot improvement safety upgrades. That's a 10-year program. And right now, we've got about $36 million of the overall sidewalk element of that committed on existing projects. As a first pass, we've been really focusing on a lot of our collector streets. These are streets like Bilby Road, Glen Street, Columbus, Limberlost to an extent, where over the years, we haven't really been investing in those at the highest level across the city. So this has been a great opportunity to really make sure that those corridors are functioning for everybody, people walking, people using mobility devices, people biking, improving the pavement. But while we're out there improving the pavement, we're also doing fully compliant sidewalks. RTA Next was passed by the voters this spring, and it has a standalone category of what we call categorical funding of $100 million over the coming 20 years for general safety improvements, which also could include and likely will include a number of sidewalks. So we have the RTNX corridor projects that I mentioned, but we're also going to have the standalone sidewalk funding, which will be, or safety funding, which will be in the amount of about $5 million per year over the coming 20 years. We anticipate kind of tranching this out in 5-year rolling plans. So these projects are not named. So we're going to go through our own process in establishing a prioritization framework to decide how to use these funds to make sure that we are doing it in kind of shorter term duration so we can be responsive to evolving needs on city streets. But it's pretty exciting and it's much needed investment. But I guess if we look back kind of at the totality here before I proceed, in all, we're looking at around $145 million over the next 20 years as a ceiling outside of corridor projects that's being invested in sidewalks from these two programs. And we recognize we have an estimated $2 billion need in the category. So what we have to do is, working in this environment of scarcity, identify criteria that can be used to help us determine where the best use of those funds can be made. So for both Proposition 411 and RTA sidewalk funds are prioritized through another public body, which Zach Coble sits on and is an active participant in, known as the Complete Streets Coordinating Council. So we've been working with that group over the last couple of years to establish defensible and meaningful criteria for the prioritization of transportation funding. The criteria we've been using for identifying and prioritizing sidewalk locations have included kind of the corridor safety profile, looking at a history of crashes, particularly severe or frequent pedestrian crashes, as we're thinking about where these sidewalk investments are needed. And I don't want to indicate that it's exclusively kind of a sidewalk installation is the appropriate countermeasure for improving pedestrian safety. We're looking at a variety of investments, including additional, you know, flashing beacon, hot crossings, increasing street lighting, and other things that we do know and are proven to improve pedestrian safety. Through Move Tucson, which I mentioned previously, which is the City of Tucson's long-range transportation plan, we have established project tiers. So we've identified about $7 billion in overall transportation needs, looking at the totality of the system needs. And we've prioritized them based on a number of criteria, such as proximity to major pedestrian generators like bus stops, schools, parks, major commercial destinations or concentrations of commercial destinations, and then other services such as public services, medical services, et cetera. We're also looking at connectivity to other infrastructure to see if it makes sense. Like if we're filling this gap and we're installing this, is this opening up a whole area to having more accessible infrastructure? In all of our decision making, we are being guided by some elements of doing an equity evaluation, looking to over invest public resources in areas that have been historically underinvested in, or where we know that the needs are greater from a transportation perspective. There's going to be higher reliance on public transportation, higher reliance on walking as a fundamental mode of transportation and not necessarily as a choice. So we want to make sure that we are addressing those needs most directly. And then the project identification for how we're coming to those sidewalks and identifying, we're pulling them out of Move Tucson. We have that transportation master plan, but we've also are always have an open intake. If there are members of the public who are submitting sidewalk needs, they can do that through the Tucson 311 public service portal. We're actively maintaining that list so that it's something we can reflect back on, you know, as this funding opportunities become available. Let me step back. I just want to mention that I did gloss over something. Major streets. Because this need is so great, one of the things that we've been using specifically for Proposition 411 is we do want to be focusing on our major roadways. You know, these are our signalized roads that are carrying a lot of traffic, not your neighborhood streets. And you know, our rationale for that is really thinking about where is the need the greatest? Where is there going to be the most pedestrians that have the highest likelihood of being in conflict with moving traffic? You know, what are the streets that are serving connections to public transportation, to bus stops? And where are most of our commercial destinations, libraries, services located? Those tend to cluster around our major streets, which is why we're looking explicitly to those, because we, you know, feel that that from a safety and accessibility and mobility perspective is going to have the greatest benefit of where using those funds, those limited funds. As part of Proposition 411, and it's kind of your peer committee, in April, we actually brought a somewhat different request. Historically, through Proposition 411, we've largely been focusing on sidewalk infill and kind of capital projects, but we also have a need for maintaining our existing sidewalk system. So the Complete Streets Coordinating Council approved a request for a kind of open item for $1 million in sidewalk repairs on major streets. And these are where we have existing sidewalk, but, you know, we're seeing heaving or buckling of the sidewalk. They're getting pushed up from tree roots because they've been getting driven over repeatedly. Maybe they're cracked and broken. So are, you know, presenting either a trip hazard or an accessibility barrier, we now have this dedicated funding that we can go out and get, you know, small concrete crews and replace a couple of panels instead of doing the totality of the sidewalk, which is then opening up that existing sidewalk to be more accessible. working with the CSCC, we also established a prioritization criteria because we know that the need is great and the funding is limited. So we were using a similar methodology that we looked at for sidewalk installation, which would be along the lines of proximity to destinations, transit stops. We were looking at the age of the request. So the older the request that came in from a citizen that we haven't been able to address or a resident, we wanted to prioritize those because maybe they've been sitting in our system for 2 to 3 years because we haven't in a couple of years had a dedicated fund source for sidewalk repair. We're considering to bring, continuing to bring equity into that conversation. And, we looked if the underlying request came from buddy who had stipulated or identified that there was an accessibility need associated with this, it was providing a barrier to somebody who was using mobility device, for example. As of today, we had about 150 open requests that we've received through Tucson 311 that we are looking to address through this $1 million. We are also, as we go out and doing the inspection of where those requests came from, we've instructed our crews to look up and down the corridor to see if there are other, you know, discontinuities in the sidewalk, broken sidewalk that can be added into those individual requests. So we're solving a number of problems at once. We do anticipate that there'll be a little bit of additional funding capacity after those 140 requests are cleared. So I think going forward, our expectation is to continue to have intake on Tucson 311 until that $1 million is expended. At that time, we'll make a determination through the CSCC, depending on funding availability, if that's a program that we will, you know, continue to carry forward. So that will be an ongoing discussion, but we just wanted to do like a pilot with this initial $1 million to see how it performs. And kind of that's the overview of really how sidewalks are getting funded currently, what the overall need is, and what our options are and programs are in the city of Tucson. I would fully encourage you to work through Zach or to communicate directly with representatives on the Complete Streets Coordinating Council if you have want to engage on this topic as we're thinking long-term about where we want to be making investments in sidewalks and really meeting the needs of the traveling public. So thank you very much. And with that, I can open it up for more open discussion or comments.
Thank you, Patrick, for your presentation, and I hope your colleagues' family's doing well. I'll open up the session for commissioners to ask questions, starting with Jessica.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I was having problems with my computer. First of all, I talked with Rob last night. I've been working with him on that construction corridor from roughly Camila to Al Vernon, trying to identify areas that the temporary curb cuts were either not there at all or had dips. And so he and I have been working for over a year, I think it is, on that. There are three main concerns that I have. Although the paving is halfway done in that area on one side of the street, you have to cross to the north side of the street to go up to Al Vernon. And even then, there is not a complete sidewalk or way to get across Al Vernon in any direction. And there are lights installed, but they are not working. There is a stop sign, but the signage to indicate, first of all, at Al Vernon, you have to go back to Dodge and cross the street and then come up. And second of all, when you try to do that, you're playing the game Frogger with you as the frog. So can we get those lights working at Dodge and Palo Verde, please? That's issue one.
Yeah, thank you for your comment. I'm not able to really be able to speak to the state of what's happening with the active construction on Grant Road. I know Rob Lane has been actively engaging on this and working with you. He had come prepared to provide some of that information, but unfortunately it's Rob who's had that family emergency and wasn't able to join us this afternoon. I wish I could provide you more information.
Since I came late, if you could, deal with that. So what about the area on Albert on South of France? That area has severely slanted sidewalks. Are they on the list to get replaced anytime soon?
On Elbernon?
Between Pima and Grant area. On the west side of the street has severely slanting. I mean, it's almost like I'm on a motorcycle trying to go around a steep corner. Yeah. I have to tilt myself in my chair that much.
Yep, that's a great comment. On Elbernon specifically, we don't have any projects identified currently, but this is a great comment. I can add this to our candidate list as we start to look for investments under RTA Next. These are exactly the kind of information we're looking for. But as of right now, I'm not aware of any active or planned projects on that section of Elbernon.
Okay, because on the east side of Elbernon, there is little to no sidewalks between Pima and Grant. So you're kind of stuck, and the only crosswalks are at Pima and Grant.
Thank you for that comment. I've written that down, and I'll add that to our candidate project list. So Elbernon from Pima to Grant.
Yeah, extremely. And I know I always encounter a lot of other people who use mobility devices, so I know that's a heavily used area for people like me, and especially towards that corner of Grant and Elbernon, you've got a lot of businesses, doctors' offices, so a lot of people need that really to kind of go towards the top of the list. And I know on Country Club, I brought this up in an email I sent. There is little to no sidewalks to get access to bus stops. And a few times I've tried it, I've had to go into what would be a bike lane and almost been hit a number of times. And I know there's been a lot of people lately who have, experienced that. Because
yeah.
I know you did mention you're trying to focus on the main roads that get a lot of heavy traffic. Country Club and Grant are really in that category.
They absolutely are. Elbernon, Country Club, Grant are all major roadways. They have transit, and we're looking at all of those. And Country Club is one that we've...
Yeah, I lived in Tucson from 86 to 2000 in this area. And back then, we were told that two things were going to be happening back then was sewers and sidewalks. And when I moved back in 2018, it still hasn't been done. And the construction's been going on since I moved. Actually, 2022, I moved back here. And the construction in this area is still going on with a lot of no sidewalks. So, I mean, it's long overdue.
Yeah. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you for those comments.
Ray, do you have any comments? Thank you, Jessica.
Thank you. Hi, Patrick. I Got a couple of questions and a couple of comments, if you wouldn't mind. Hopefully I'll make them reasonably short. The audit that you were talking about earlier on, we had a vehicle equipped with LiDAR to map the sidewalks and their conditions. I'm wondering whether that audit picked up things like something that Jessica mentioned a minute ago about the crosswise tilt of sidewalks, whether it picks up curb ramps that are overly steep or also have a crosswise tilt, which is something that happens with the curb ramps that are built on a corner so that the curb ramp actually faces 45 degrees. So a person who doesn't know, like perhaps somebody with low vision, might, if they're following the downwards slope of the curb ramp, may find themselves in the middle of the intersection, which is, I think, quite a dangerous situation. And in a lot of instances, there's no need for that. But anyway, some of those are overly steep. Some of those have a crosswise tilt and make it quite difficult for somebody in a wheelchair. And I'm wondering whether the audit picks that stuff up as well, and whether perhaps, if it doesn't, perhaps the $1.5 to $2 billion estimate might be, in fact, an underestimate.
Yeah.
That's the first question. I know it's a biggie.
No, that's a great question. And I've got two answers for you. So on the cross slope, yes. The answer is yes. So the way the mobile LiDAR worked, it had 1 millimeter resolution. So the data was extremely granular. And in fact, we had to physically go up to Phoenix to pick up the server because I want to say it was, I don't remember, 3 terabytes of data, which was a point cloud of basically every asset and attribute that's in the public right-of-way across the city of Tucson. That's an overwhelming amount of data to digest, so what we've done is distilled it down into more simple tools that we could look at, but it did look at cross slopes of driveways that cross sidewalks, the actual cross slopes of the sidewalk themselves, the dimensions of the ramp, the position of the push buttons on poles, whether there was heaving on the sidewalk, creating, you know, that height differential where there's no ramp accounting for it. I won't argue that the data are perfect. There are things that we find in there. We know there are some remnants of just how the function of how it was collected. But for a systemic review, it's a pretty good starting point for knowing where those challenges are. And, the cross slope was a factor in that. Regarding your second comment, thank you for bringing that up. You know, looking at the curb ramps kind of located 45 degrees on the apex of the returns or the curb returns. We've recently updated the city standard on that and are strongly encouraging directional ramps, kind of with the dominant flow of travel and aligning with those crosswalks, well aware that they can put low vision pedestrians into, unpredicted locations or unpredictable locations within the crosswalk. So just for positioning. On some of these repaving jobs, it's been challenging to change them because that intersection geometry has already been established for that kind of diagonal crossing on kind of local street intersections. In many cases, there are other constraints that are restricting us from putting those directional in. But when we're doing these larger capital project that I've mentioned, those are all getting those directional ramps installed, most importantly on our local streets, because we don't want to be having, you know, people going into the center of those high volume intersections. So thanks for those comments.
Absolutely. Is the audit data or perhaps a summary thereof available either to the public or to the Complete Streets Council?
It is. We included it. So as I mentioned, Move Tucson is functioning as our ADA transition plan. One of the appendices in a static version of the ADA transition plan does have the results of that data collection. It is static. It's on a PDF. It's not on like an interactive web map. So, you know, your mileage may vary on the level of detail that's provided on an individual segment. But in terms of the system-wide evaluation, you can get a good sense of it there. And that's where that $987 million kind of need estimate I quoted came out of. It also talks about a city commitment to really be a target of investing $5 million annually in upgrading accessibility on pedestrian infrastructure, which I'm happy to report we are meeting with, you know, Proposition 411 and now with the continuation RTA.
Fantastic. Final question and comment. The 311 system for public reporting, I'm happy to report, actually works.
Hey.
I've reported several. Not all of them have been done yet, but several have been, either sidewalk repairs or curb ramp repairs. So I'm very pleased about that. And is there a list we can see to see where our, you know, when we've reported something, where we are on the priority list? You know, perhaps it'll be another, because it does take a little while. I think, depending upon the severity, I guess, so anywhere from 3 or 4 months to a year in one case.
Yeah, I can't answer that. That's usually being managed out of our maintenance crews, so which I don't have any exposure to. They are maintaining the list. So the way that works is that comes in through an infrastructure management system that we have called Cartograph. So we can all see that internally, but I don't believe, and Lydia, my colleague Lydia Barker is on the call, who's been involved in this, might be able to provide more insight, but I don't believe there's like a list of when the projects are going to be completed, but we do know where those requests are coming in, and then they ultimately get plugged into a work order for our maintenance crews.
Thank you.
Thank you. Jeremy. You are muted, by the way. There.
I didn't know how this is my second meeting, but how I would, and I'm shifting gears a little bit, but how I would introduce another topic I wanted to discuss. Do I have to email someone about, I know this is off task, but I don't know how to do that. And so, is there time at the end of the meeting to bring things up, or how do we usually address those issues?
Sorry, what do you mean, Jeremy?
If I want to bring up an issue in the community that I think affects the disabled community, how do I go about bringing that? Where's the time and the place to bring that up? I was going to chat that to you, but the chat is locked. So I didn't have a way to ask that question without interrupting the pace, and I apologize for that.
Actually, Ray, do you know about this one, that question?
That is a good question. I think at the end of the meeting, we've got an agenda item that is called
announcements.
I would suggest.
I just wanted to make
with
sure
your
that
permission,
a
Jonathan.
Moment just to bring.
Yeah,
bring
that sounds great.
Up. That's all I wanted to say.
All right, thanks, Jeremy.
If I am going to ask Patrick something, it just popped in my head. What I was thinking is, this is specifically about like the improvement of the safety and accessibility on the sidewalks. Is there anything to say about beautifying the area? Does that go through your office at all with maybe desert plants or with different colored tile on the repairs? I mean, you know, I've lived in Tucson since 1978, and it's not as good looking as it used to be. And I think that, you know, native plants and even different colors on sidewalks, rocks make every dirt patch look better. So in any of these places that we're talking about, is there anything to do, or is that a different committee or a different group or what?
No, that's a great question. And it's oftentimes funding dependent. So when we're doing those big corridor projects where we're kind of, you know, reimagining the entirety of that corridor, oftentimes, by requirement, that includes public art. So we'll have artistic components of that, and there's a whole public art process that goes through. So that may look very different in every project. It also will include landscaping beautification components as part of those corridor upgrades. That's a standard component of our major capital projects. We've also got what we call kind of walkability projects, which are funded under a separate program. Those are more comprehensive in terms of the types of pedestrian improvements that we'll be doing and include beautification, landscape installations, other components. A lot of those 411 funds are more restricted specifically to sidewalks, and that was just the nature of how they were approved by the voters, and they were really focused on kind of functionality and safety. But Tucson Water has a kind of a separate program which we've been partnering with strategically called Storm to Shade. And we're taking advantage of those partnerships. When we're doing these corridor upgrades and doing sidewalks, they can come in jointly with us through a fee that's on your water bill to do green stormwater infrastructure installations. And essentially, they're taking the stormwater off of the street, using it as a resource, and installing, like, you know, basins that are doing water harvesting and growing trees and native vegetation and native plants. So that's a strategy that we've been pursuing. So I think there is a beautification and kind of a walkability component that goes into a lot of these projects, but it is funding dependent.
You know, I've taught high school for almost 30 years, and the Museum of Art at the university just had an entire wing of high school student artwork. Really talented. One of my kids was featured there. Really talented kids. And so, you know, I think a big part of any cause that we might bring up, community buy-in really matters. And I can think of, like, nothing better for community buy-in than incorporating talented 15 to 18-year-olds.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if thinking about the beautification part and if you pass this on to whoever needs to go to, but, you know, high schools are a great source for that kind of stuff. And, you know, and they're doing even – you know, sculpture stuff, or, I mean, it's permanent stuff that could really beautify the area. You know, maybe, you know, I think about it's the Freedom Trail in Boston, and we have the Red Trail downtown here, you know, so maybe, you know, Tucson markers or Tucson trivia or Tucson information or something that just kind of just doesn't simply focus on the accessibility, because that affects a significant percentage of us, but the types of things I'm talking about, I think, pulls more community buy-in.
Yeah, no, that's a great comment. I'm excited to be able to share this with you. We actually have a program called Transportation Art by Youth, which is managed through Pima Association of Governments. So on a rotating basis around the youth, the region, they actually have a program where they identify a location where they get a handful of youth artists to kind of work under a professional artist to come up with a art concept for an installation. And Lydia, I want to turn it over to you. You manage our public art program. Is there anything you want to say on that?
Yeah, I got so excited, Jeremy, when you brought that up, because I agree that youth artists is a great way to get community buy-in. Yeah, we have a Transportation Art by Youth project in the works for summer of next year. So it's kind of a summer program that we have every 3 years. So if you want to talk specifically about that, Jeremy, I'm happy to chat with you about that offline.
Yeah, I think community buy-in is key for anything we talk about. And the more people at the table, probably the better the community is.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Yep.
All right, Jessica.
Yeah, I have a question. Since the sidewalks would basically be covered dealing with ADA issues, is there any federal money that can supplement so that we can maybe get this done faster to bring it up to ADA standards?
Yeah, there are some federal funds that are available, and actually we have just submitted a grant request for federal funding for pedestrian safety and overall corridor improvements on Fort Lowell. So we're waiting to hear back from that, and it's the mile between Oracle and First Avenue where we see a disproportionate number of pedestrian crashes within the city on that mile of roadway. There's intermittent sidewalks, there's no lighting, so we can bring some federal funding to bear. A lot of what's available through the federal government right now are being distributed on a competitive basis, so we are pursuing a lot of those federal grant opportunities as they arise. We did get $25 million for the 22nd Street Bridge, which has made that project whole under construction currently. We've applied for $25 million in federal funding to kind of expand the pie for the First Avenue project that's currently in design. and we've applied for $5 million for the Fort Wool project. But yeah, but anything we can do to bring more money into the community to address these really critical needs, we are looking to pursue. So thanks for the comment.
Okay, by the way, Jeremy, I just emailed Brandy about my issues, and that's how it got on the agenda for today about the sidewalk.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. Do any more commissioners have any questions for Patrick? I'll jump in with one kind of question related to Ray's, actually. I was really interested in the LiDAR stuff. I know that's probably got, I don't know, quadrillions of bits of data for all of that. And what were the thresholds, and how did you guys even determine what is detected? It was automated, or are you guys actually sifting through all the data yourself?
So, yeah, there was a contract for somebody to go out and collect the data, and then we had to make some determinations on those interpretations. So what we were ultimately looking for were those thresholds to see where we were kind of meeting. So I'll step back. So we had certain technical capacity that was an expectation of that data collection, and then we worked to make determinations and kind of value determinations on the interpretations of that data. So it had to be granular enough to be able to pull something meaningful out of it. I think what became a challenge was not so much as, you know, compliant or deficient, but what do you do with that information? We have a lot of deficiencies, but how do you interpret it to make it meaningful and actionable? And I think that's where a lot of that discussion occurred around. And that's where we got to, you know, do we want to prioritize addressing an entire corridor, or do we want to prioritize like spot improvements? Because if you can fix 15 feet of sidewalk, maybe you've just opened up, you know, 1300 linear feet, and this was the only gap on that. So like that was a strong basis for those discussions.
Thank you. That makes a lot of sense. Are there any other commissioners with questions? If not, thank you, Patrick and Lydia, for the presentation and talking. We're going to cover some like memos and minutes. You guys are more than welcome to stay or leave. It's up to you, but appreciate your time here and presenting with us.
Yeah, and thank you so much, Jonathan. And I just want to mention I do have Country Club, and Elvernon as on my to-do list as kind of a takeaway from this. So I will add those to kind of our candidate project list. So thank you, Jessica, for those comments.
Okay. By the way, Patrick, I told Rob, since I live in the area, I'm willing to, you know, come to whatever part and be the guinea pig. And, you know, I basically live Seneca and Country Club area. So it's easy for me. And since I'm basically stay at home and a flexible schedule, so if you need a guinea pig, I'm willing.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. I'll be in touch if something comes up. I appreciate it. Thank you for the comments.
Thank you. All right. Next on the agenda, we have approval of the May 2026 meeting minutes. Have any of the commissioners reviewed the minutes and decided they would like to have any changes or additions to the prior month?
No.
Ray.
Thank you. I would just like to say that the minutes have been really good and just the right amount of detail. Once again, I know I've said that a few times, saying it again. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. With that, if nobody has anything else, can I get a motion to approve the minutes?
So I make a motion to approve the minutes.
Then do a roll call, Tracy, just FYI.
Oh, thank you. I had a Derek do first, and then Jessica second.
And so I second the motion.
Thank you. Yeah, Stephanie, can we get the roll call?
Yeah, sorry, guys. Brandy lost connection with the weather, so I'm going to jump in really quick. So Jessica Edwards?
Yeah, I accept the minutes.
Kate Elliott?
Yes.
Jeremy Harkin?
Yep.
Derek Espadas?
Yes.
Cam Juarez? Megan Rajovic?
Yay.
Jonathan Lee Confer.
Yes.
Zach Coble. Ray Jordan.
Yes.
Chaz Gross.
Yes, thank you.
Motion passes.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. We have one more voting item on the agenda for number 6. This is going to be approval of the parks and recreation fees memo. Do any commissioners have any changes or anything to discuss before we move to a vote? Ray.
Yes, so this, what we're voting on, I think, is the version of the memo that was circulated with the agenda and minutes, which is different to the original memo because of the outcome of our last CODI meeting where the Director of Parks and Recreation came and talked about the fees. And this memo is about thanking the Mayor and Council and the Parks and Recreation Department for deciding to not go ahead with fees for the therapy pool, the most common of all of the fee gathering, all the fee changes that were proposed that would affect people with disabilities and seniors. So just thought I'd give a quick explanation of what that was all about.
Yeah, thank you for that.
And I move the motion to accept it.
Thank you, Ray, for the motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
All right. Thank you, Jessica.
Still freaking out about light.
What was that, Tiffany?
Oh, no, sorry. I was just turning on my mic. I think that's like background sound.
Oh. Got it. Could you do a roll call?
Yes. Jessica Edwards?
Accept.
Kate Elliott?
Yes.
Jeremy Harkin?
Yeah.
Derek Espadas?
Yes.
Megan Brodjevich?
Yay.
Jonathan Lee Confer?
Yes.
Ray Jordan?
Yes.
And Chaz Gross?
Yes.
Motion passes. Really quick before we move on, Commissioner Edwards, I think you kind of cut out for the memorandum with additional edits. Would you like to give your motion so we have it on the record and it counts?
I was just going to do that. I did hear what was going on. I just couldn't get the mic to work. It's a yay for the motion.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for getting that, Stephanie. All right, so this will be the agenda number 7. We'll do announcements, which would be inviting any commissioners to share events or efforts in the community related to disabilities. But just before that, let's open up for Jeremy to share what you were thinking about earlier about you wanted to share something about a complaint, I believe.
Yeah, not a complaint, but the reason I'm here is, and this is, I contracted the polio virus when I was 11 months old. Through a live vaccine and a doctor's mistake, and it's a long tale. I always rejected any accommodations because I always saw myself as normal, like able-bodied, like I didn't need your help kind of thing, right? Now I'm 51, and as I've gotten older, my ego has softened a little bit, and I've recognized my own mortality a little bit closer, and, you know, the assistance that is obviously through the ADA and then the community and so forth has proven to be very helpful. Well, in January, I broke my femur through a freak accident and I was wheelchair bound for about 10 weeks, which was a whole new experience for me. I've never been wheelchair bound. I had to adjust to everything. Everything was different. And what really heightened my uber awareness of the wrongs was disabled parking. And I would go places, and because I had to get a wheelchair out of the car, I couldn't stay. Like, I couldn't go. I couldn't go to church. I couldn't go to meet someone at a restaurant. I had to have someone in the car with me because the disabled spots would often be taken. One out of seven drivers in Arizona has disabled access. And in the mid-90s, the Supreme Court tried to tighten the conditions for accessible parking, and it's failed. And I started with city council, and I tried to communicate with the governor with no end. And this is even a national or a federal issue because it's a federal law. I mean, state laws can be different, of course, but I don't know if anyone else has any difficulties with this. I find myself, now that I'm back walking again, even more in tune. I play pickup ball with the Tucson Lobos, which is the wheelchair basketball team in the community. When I talk to those guys are more limited than I am. A lot of them are wheelchair bound permanently. And the stories they have about things they can't do that the law is supposed to allow them to do is heartbreaking. I don't know if I'm just venting, or I don't know if this is something that can be addressed by a small little, you know, band of merry men and women like us, but it's a huge issue. And when I go to the gym every morning to do my workout, there are seven disabled spots. And I watch people with their placards, and I watch, and I don't know everyone's story. I don't, but I also know that when I'm with my leg braces and my crutches and I'm staggering along and I'm in a different brace and I'm in different shoes and I'm just trying to get to the pool, you know, and I watch the 25-year-old jump out of the car, or I watch the 45-year-old get in a truck that's taller than me, I'm thinking to myself, this is not right, just, or how the law's intended to work. I don't know what to do about it, but it can start small. I don't know.
Megan.
Hi there, Jeremy. I really appreciate you opening up to us and, you know, sharing your experience. I know it's not always so easy, and I appreciate you for, you know, trusting us with your story. If I may offer my perspective, are you open to it?
Of course.
So I'm 28, and I have a placard for accessible parking. And as someone with, like, an invisible disability and, like, having it since I was 18, I didn't come to terms with my sister and her husband are both wheelchair users. And I was like, I'm not as disabled as she is, like, how am I supposed to identify as a disabled person? But at the same time, like, whenever I woke up, I couldn't really get out of bed, and it was just because it hurt. Or, like, I would tell myself it didn't hurt because that's how I was raised to push through it. And, you know, the hardest thing is getting through internalized ableism as a disabled person. Like, I feel like when I put my placard up and I hop out of my car and I walk into Target, and I feel like I have to look disabled sometimes if I walk past someone in a wheelchair using their spot. But sincerely, like, I only have so many spoons to go get some milk and get the hell home. You know, who knows if I'll even be able to cook, you know? And you said it. You said it with, you don't know anyone's story. And I think, like, detangling those ableist thoughts and where they're rooted from is a gruesome process. It is really not easy. And I encourage you to continue sharing and talking this out loud with, I'm opening myself up if you ever want to talk about it, or I would hope this group is always open, but it's not an easy process, and it is way easier when you continue talking about it. So thank you.
Thank you for sharing. You can go on the internet and buy a disabled placard. Like, an able-bodied person can buy a disabled placard. I confronted someone at the gym recently about it, and he was in his 30s, and he said, well, when his parents died, they wanted him to have the placard. So, and like I said, everyone has a unique story, and this is not, I'm not angry, or I'm not looking for any kind of social change or political change or legal change based on individual concerns. Although I do think some type of, in my perfect world, some type of color-coded system would work, where folks that are in chairs, I mean, I the stories I hear about the guys on the basketball team that can't get in their van, they can't get out of their van, can't get out of their cars, because the places with the lines are designed for wheelchair cars only. Can you picture what I'm talking about? A normal parking space is too narrow to get out of. You cannot get a wheelchair out. There's not the space. You need the specific space with the lines. And when I talk to people about that, they don't, that doesn't even process. And I probably knew that, but I didn't feel that burn until I was stuck in a wheelchair for 10 weeks and could not access places because the lined places were taken by people walking. And so I just wanted to know if there were any ideas about how we can protect that as the law was intended, to assist people who truly need it and to have some sort of consequence at some level for people that abuse it.
I think we can report buildings that don't have enough, because there's a law, I can't quote it right now, but a certain amount of like square footage or rooms to a building has to require a certain amount of accessible parking spots. So I know Disability Rights Arizona will like be a resource for people to report to when ADA is not being complied with. I don't really know any other resources. Does anyone else?
Well, the law is one disabled parking spot for 25 able-bodied parking spots. That's the federal law. But my issue is not with the terrible parking lot at Speedway and Wilmot, which is the Trader Joe's parking lot. My issue is with the complete and total disregard for the intent of the law to protect people to have equal access, which isn't happening. I was locked out for 10 weeks. And there are people that I know that are locked out. They'll go somewhere and they'll turn around because there's nowhere to park the damn car, because 1 out of 7 Arizona drivers have disabled access. 1 out of 7. It's wild to me. 1 out of 7, that's wild.
Yeah, thank you, Megan, for sharing your perspective earlier.
Thank you, Megan.
Appreciate that. Ray, do you have any comment?
I do. Firstly, on the topic that Jeremy brought up, and I'm wondering whether perhaps that's the subject of the next Cody memo that goes to Mayor and Council, although I think they have limited authority and ability to do anything, but it's probably well worthwhile us as a commission to bring that issue to their attention. So I'm wondering whether a number of people with personal experience of this might put some thoughts together into an email or into the beginnings of a Word document or some such thing. And between the chair, I'm volunteering Zach because he's the chair and because he's not here, perhaps put all of those things together into one cohesive document that we can then send to Mayor and Council.
Yeah, I liked two things. One with Megan's perspective is I kind of follow that too, of not to assume people are faking with a placard if they show up with that, because we never know the invisible things that people deal with that we don't see, but they're experiencing. And I think with Ray's comment, the ADA minimum parking spaces is literally the minimum. We can always ask the city to suggest a higher threshold, so we still meet federal guidelines, but we can have our own city internal guidelines if they're willing to ever do that. And I think that'd be the next step, is ask, yeah. I think I heard Zach volunteer too from his absence that he would like to maybe look into like maybe sending an email or memo or something to talk to the city about increasing the minimums within the city limits. That'd be really interesting. I think solution, most prudent one probably to solve what Jeremy's talking about or bringing up.
Mm. I don't see it as a solution, but it's a good way to bring it to the attention.
Yeah.
Even like public service announcements. I mean, I see public service announcements about, like, you know, you drink, you drive, you're arrested, or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, public service announcements that be more gentle. Like, there are people that have real struggles that really rely on this accommodation. So just be more conscious. Be better. I can email that, but that's just on my mind.
Ray, do you have anything else to add in?
I did. I want to, but before I move on to the topic, I actually wanted to quickly mention is that I wonder whether, as a result of the memo perhaps, we could get City of Tucson parking inspectors to check the legitimacy of every parking placard that they see. Check that, because they're all like serial numbered or some such.
They are, and thing. Many placards are now issued for a lifetime.
So that would be for ADOT. That would be a state.
State driving, right?
And it would make my wife very mad to have to stop using my placard.
I this is a thorny issue for a lot of people, but let me tell you, man, when I started, if people have a placard, they want to use it. I get it.
Jessica, do you have something on this topic too, or?
Yes. I have lived multiple states when I've run into this situation, Jeremy. I went online, got the statistics with the census, how many people identify as being disabled in the census, and what the population was of that area, put it together in like a letter, and sent it or emailed it to the particular store, or if it was like a plaza, whoever, you know, was in charge of that plaza, and, you know, asked them if they could maybe remove 5 regular parking places and create 3 more disabled parking places. You know, it's a minimal change. A lot of times they were quite astonished to realize just how many disabled are in the area. And also, I would point out about that 1 in 7 statistic that would leave, which means they're losing business by ignoring that quality.
Oh.
And I wrestled like you did in the beginning. When I taught school, I taught my kids that instead of being labeled disabled, I said it's differently abled. You can do it, but you've got to make maybe some type of change in order to do something. And that, you know, almost everybody is differently abled in one aspect of their life or another, some more severe. So that's what I would do, is contact whoever owns, like a Walmart manager, or send it to the regional for a change. It can't hurt. The worst they can say is no. The best they can say is yes. But I do also like the suggestion of getting the city to institute their thing, to make it, you know, more handicapped places in parking. Most of them that are reluctant to do it will fight, well, we're grandfathered in. I'm experiencing that with the apartment complex I live in. I've had to fight them to get multiple curb cuts, because they only had piles of asphalt in two places on a complex that has more than 300 units. So, but there are some government agencies in each state that oversee ADA accessibility. I know up in Utah, it was the Department of Labor. And they actually had a hearing with the complex I lived in up there to get them to put in more curb cuts and wheelchair parking.
Thank you, Jessica.
That's my suggestion.
Appreciate it. Derek?
Yeah, just for information. So there's going to be federal jurisdiction, state jurisdiction, and then local codes. One of the reasons there's not enforcement on parking on private property. So let's say, and it's been a while since I've been to that horrible parking lot on Wilmot, it's because it's private property. So unless, like, we'll just say Trader Joe's says we have a problem here, and it depending on what the problem's going to be, it's not prioritized. So parking isn't in the police. You're not going to get five police cars with sirens coming down for parking. And I understand the frustration with that. I'm a lot more. I tried to be a lot more like Megan, where I just have to let it go or else it eats me up all day. That's just my personal choice. And I don't know what's going on or what time lapse or anything like to anyone's issues, temporary or permanent. For me, it's actually been easier with an electric chair. Cause now I don't need to worry about distance. But I do remember tricky spaces using a manual chair and kind of to the incline or I came out of my podiatrist the other day and there was a gentleman having trouble getting up his chair and I had my electric. So I was able to tow him, but I understand that incline and it's just, you know, that imperfect world. I kind of joke around too that when I go, usually I get the great parking, but then if I go to an event where there's older people, I do not, and I hate it. So I can't go to the ballet or anything like that because all the parking spaces are, all the handicapped spaces are taken. One of the areas where I think we can have some influence is with downtown and the charge for parking. So even if you have an handicap placard, you still have to pay for parking. Places like Los Angeles and Houston, you get it for free. And I do think that's an issue because if I have to park in a particular spot to have accessibility, and I will also say those accessible spots are not accessible at all. They're not put in the right place. And it kind of goes to that seven space per. They don't have to put them in a good space. They can be wherever. I think that's something that we can possibly tackle and have some influence on, because it is municipal, that we can at least get some change down there, whether it's where the spaces are or having to pay for them. And I also think kind of like, as Cam puts it, those who are differently armed, you know, putting coins in a meter can be challenging, or however the system is. So I do think that's an area in the municipal areas where we can have some influence and get some change.
Definitely armed is so gangster.
Ray, do you have a comment still?
I do, yeah. I do have one. Completely different subject.
Yeah.
Next Tuesday, June 23, at 5:30 p.m., Mayor and Council Chambers in downtown. And this, I'm reading from an email that I received from Chris Desborough. This is the very first time that the City of Tucson has recognized July as Disability Pride Month. and I'm hoping that we can get a strong turnout and fill the public gallery with folks from across the disability community to show our elected officials how important it is to us. Next Tuesday.
The irony is there's like one space for a wheelchair. So,
well, that, you know, if people like us show up in numbers, that may change.
Yeah, I'm all for it.
Like to see them turn us away because there isn't space. Show me that. I think they're people with good hearts, so somebody will figure something out. But I am intending to be there.
What time was it, Ray?
5:30 p.m. And I'm surprised this didn't make it onto our agenda. However, there it is. Next Tuesday, June 23. Is everybody writing this down in their calendars? Mayor and Council Chambers downtown, 5:30 p.m.
One of the people who take transcription could write up a real quick email and send it to each of us.
Perhaps Stephanie, if I were to email you this, forward this email from Chris to you, could you distribute it through Cody, please?
Yeah, absolutely. I can send it to everybody.
Awesome. I'm doing that right now.
Thank you, Stephanie. Oh, no, I covered up my screen.
Are there any more announcements? Thank you, Ray, for that one. That one's important. Are there any other announcements from anybody else?
Do we have the next meetings? Are they already scheduled for the next couple of months so I can note them now? I this one kind of popped up on me, and I had to turn some things around. Do we know when we're meeting in July and August? And
yeah, it's the third Wednesday each time, 3:30. Yeah.
Third Wednesday, so the next one will be July 15th, looking at my...
Yeah.
Okay, all right, third Wednesday. I didn't know that was the day. Okay. All right, got it. Thank you.
Yeah. All right, if there are no other announcements, we can go ahead and adjourn the meeting. And thank you guys for your participation and coming. We'll see you guys in about a month.
Thank you, Jared.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks again for your
bye,
work.
Everyone. Thank
Thanks
you.
Again for your work on that memo.
Goodbye. Have a good evening.
Yeah, yeah.